Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Are the parties ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, you may proceed.
May it please the Court, my name is Barbara Masilko, Deputy Madison County Public Defender, and counsel for the appellant, Jason Boucher. Mr. Boucher asked this court to vacate his lifetime registration and lifetime community supervision under the Nebraska Sex Offender Registration Act as punishments that violate the right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment, as they impose a mandatory lifelong sentence on him for an offense that was committed while he was a juvenile. In addition, Mr. Boucher asked this court to find that the imposition of lifetime community supervision is an ex post facto form of punishment as applied to him, because the prosecution failed to establish that his offense was committed after the effective date of July 14, 2006. Mr. Boucher pled no contest to a single count information alleging that between January 1, 2005 and December 31, 2008, he committed the crime of sexual assault in the first degree. Subsequent to entering the no contest plea, an aggravation hearing was held at which the prosecution called one witness, the victim's grandfather, who testified as to her date of birth, making her no older than 11 years old at the last effective date alleged in the information, December 31, 2008. Prior to the imposition of a finding of aggravation in this case, trial counsel argued that Mr. Boucher could not be subjected to the aggravation finding and the lifetime registration and lifetime community supervision portions of the sentence, because to do so would be a cruel and unusual punishment, given that he was no more than 16 years of age at any time alleged in the information, making him a juvenile. Subsequent to that argument, the court found that there was no provision in the statute regarding the age of the offender at the time the offense was committed, and subjected him to lifetime registration and lifetime community supervision, in addition to a sentence of 1-to-1 at the Nebraska Department of Corrections statutory minimum. As part of that sentencing judgment, the court noted specific factors that were favorable to Mr. Boucher, including the fact that the specific metric, the sex offender registration likelihood to commit a new offense, indicated that he was not at a high risk to reoffend, as contained in the PSI. Despite that, the court was required to sentence him to lifetime registration and lifetime community supervision because the statute had no provision allowing individual sentencing circumstances to be taken into consideration. And as the U.S. Supreme Court has said in a developing line of precedence, when adult sentences are imposed on juveniles that mandatory lifetime consequences without taking into consideration the individual factors, both of the culpability of the juvenile and his likelihood for rehabilitation, that amounts to cruel and unusual punishment under the federal Constitution. It is because Mr. Boucher's sentence is grossly disproportionate that he asked the court to vacate the portions requiring lifetime registration and lifetime community supervision as cruel and unusual punishments. First, there was no consideration of culpability made in the imposition of Mr. Boucher's sentence. The finding that the crime he committed was aggravated was based solely on the age of the victim alone, in disregard of the fact that he was also a teenager at the time of the alleged offense, and that he had described the contact as more like a game of truth or dare than a first-degree sexual assault.
Is there anything in the PSR that the court could look to determine aggravation?
The pre-sentence investigation report contains the police reports that were submitted by the county attorney. Those police reports contain hearsay allegations from the victim that were never offered as evidence and that were never inquired to or presented by the prosecution during any phase of guilt or innocence, either as a factual basis for the underlying crime itself or as a factual basis for the aggravation finding.
Well, we've held that the registration is not punishment, is that correct?
In the past, this court, looking at a prior version of the Registration Act, has held that it's not a form of punishment. But the factors that this court and other courts have used to determine whether or not sex offender registration is a form of punishment are different when considered by a juvenile. And that's because the scientific evidence that this court, as recently as in 2012 in State versus Harris, relied upon to say that the purpose of sex offender registration is to protect the public from the risk of a high possibility of reoffense simply doesn't measure up. There's no conclusive evidence that that same high risk of offense is equally applicable when the offense is committed by juveniles. In fact, looking very similarly at another case, the Federal Ninth Circuit in U.S. versus Juvenile Male said that the predictive value of juvenile conduct, especially sexual conduct, is not necessarily indicative of a likelihood to reoffend. And in that case, the court decided not to to find that the notification requirement under a similar federal law was a form of punishment when applied to an offense committed by a juvenile.
Would the Miller versus Alabama line of jurisprudence not have any implication had the district court had discretion as to whether to make this lifetime or not?
I think that's absolutely true. As the court said in Miller, youth matters for the purposes of meting out the state's most harsh, serious punishments. And the very provisions, the confluence of provisions between the aggravation finding and lifetime registration prohibited the district court judge from making that determination.
So if the statute had made this discretionary to the district court and the district court had nonetheless imposed it, you wouldn't be making a constitutional argument.
I don't think the same argument would apply because I don't think the district court would have imposed it given the other comments they made regarding Mr. Boucher's culpability for the offense and because they chose to sentence him to the statutory minimum that they could in the case. I think both of those argue that had the district court judge had any discretion in imposing that, he very well might not have considered imposing a lifetime registration requirement on Mr. Boucher.
Counsel, are you making challenge or a facial challenge on your constitutional assignment of error?
In both instances, Mr. Boucher argues that the statute is unconstitutional as applies to him, given that he was a juvenile at the time.
What? I don't want to interrupt. What can you tell us, if anything, about the state of the law nationally as it regards juvenile sex offenders and registration or supervision statutory schemes?
They're both national federal statutory schemes enacted under the Adam Walsh Act, requiring similar forms of registration to the Nebraska statute. And then there are state laws. And two states have reviewed their state laws and found, at least regarding juveniles adjudicated in juvenile court, that lifetime registration can't be applied. Specifically, Pennsylvania and Ohio have found, although they've based their decisions on different constitutional rights, Ohio based on a right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment, and in Pennsylvania based on a state law right regarding reputation and due process, that it is impermissible to imply that mandatory presumption of unredeemability on a juvenile simply because they committed a sexual offense while a juvenile.
And both of those cases that you cite us to involved juveniles who were tried as juveniles, tried in juvenile court, correct?
That is accurate, Your Honor.
Mr. Boucher was tried as an adult.
Yes, Your Honor.
And if he had been in juvenile court, the SORA statutes wouldn't have applied. Is that your position?
In Nebraska, SORA does not apply to any juveniles adjudicated in juvenile court for sexual offenses. That is accurate.
Is there a policy reason for that? Is your argument, since it doesn't apply in juvenile court, why should we apply it here?
I think that's accurate, Your Honor, and I think I noticed that I'm into my rebuttal time, but I do want to answer the question because I think the difference is in Nebraska, if he had been tried as a juvenile, he wouldn't have been required to submit to lifetime registration. And he wasn't tried as a juvenile because the prosecution was initiated after he'd already reached age 22. I think there's evidence in the record to suggest that the prosecutor might have tried him as a juvenile had the allegations been discovered closer to the time in which the incident occurred.
Count, before you sit down, I have one quick question. Within the last 10 days, the U.S. Supreme Court's decided a case about the retroactivity of Miller versus Alabama. Are you familiar with that opinion?
I'm not, Your Honor. I apologize.
All right, then I'll take any more of your time.
Nathan Bliss, Assistant Attorney General.
Good morning.
Appearing on behalf of the Appalachian State of Nebraska. As far as the cruel and unusual claim, the state maintains that this claim is not properly before this court, given that the appellant failed to comply with Rule 9A This court has repeatedly held that strict compliance with compliance rules required. Failure to do so, constitutional issue in question will not be considered on appeal. In this case, law is controlling here. As far as the second issue,
what's the purpose of the rule?
The purpose of the rule is to ensure that the case gets a proper review, that it's properly docketed with the Supreme Court, and that the court has the opportunity to have a full panel.
Is the Attorney General's office notified of the allegation?
On appeal?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we received their brief. There's no issue with respect to us receiving notice, but...
But because they didn't comply with 9E to the exact letter, then they aren't entitled to raise that issue? Is that what you're saying?
That's what our case law says. Suggesting that that case law is controlling. In several of those cases, I believe, at least four or five of those cases, this court said that rule is controlling and the analysis simply stopped. We don't need the issue.
We've ignored that rule in applied challenges, though, have we not?
I don't know if I would say the rule's been ignored. There have been cases where court pointed to the rule and said this was not properly presented and then nonetheless went on to do further analysis and said the claims nonetheless without merit for other reasons as well. So I don't know I would say the rule was ignored. I guess I took it more as an alternative basis for saying the claim fails. But I think the rule is still controlling. It's controlling here.
Well, I think in Johnson there was at least some analysis. You can't get to the merits of the case without looking at the statute first, something to that effect. I don't know how that fits with 9E, but maybe it's an alternative rationale.
And I think in the very tail end, I was looking at Johnson again, if I'm recalling it correctly, at the very end, the court just said, and nonetheless, we don't reach this issue. And that was the ultimate conclusion.
Do you agree that this is presented, to the extent there is a constitutional question presented to us, do you agree that it is an as-applied challenge?
Yes, with respect to both claims, it would be an as-applied challenge. On the ex post facto claim, we would submit it's not properly before this court for two reasons. First, again, lack of compliance with Rule 9E, and second, because the constitutional challenge was not presented below.
Assuming that we were to find that the Rule 9E was not an insurmountable obstacle on the lifetime registration and supervision as applied to a juvenile, would you care to enlighten us on what the state's position is as to the merits?
State's position would be, if you reach the merits, that it's not cruel and unusual. Life without parole, life imprisonment without parole is permissible for a juvenile, so we see no reason to conclude or no basis to conclude that lifetime on parole would be unconstitutional under the Eighth Amendment.
Does the fact that it's mandatory change that analysis in any way?
I don't think that it does, because when we look at Miller v. Alabama, Miller v. Alabama is saying you can't do the harshest possible penalty on our mandatory scheme. You can't do life in prison on a mandatory basis. It doesn't come out and say you can't do lifetime parole on a mandatory basis. So when we look at the very thrust of Miller, they're saying that we need to make sure juveniles are getting a meaningful opportunity at parole and they need to be able to get it, and that's exactly what he got. He got it. So what he got complies with Miller. It doesn't run afoul of Miller.
Is there anything in the Montgomery case that enlightens this discussion? Or you may not have had a chance to see it.
I've not yet had a chance to read it. I'm generally familiar with what it says. Miller applies retroactively, and then, as I understand it, they conclude by saying you don't necessarily need to resentence all these juveniles. Just make sure they're eligible for parole, or just give them parole. And so I guess that would, again, support my response to Justice Gaskell. That's the very essence of it. Just make sure they can at least be eligible for parole or get it. And that's what he got here.
Thank you.
So your view is, to the extent, I realize you haven't read it, but your view is, based on your understanding of Montgomery, it actually supports your position.
Yes. There are no other questions. We would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Okay.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
Yes, if you want.
I'd first like just to reiterate that I appreciate that this court has in the past looked at whether or not an as-applied challenge, and not even an as-applied challenge to the law under which a defendant is prosecuted, but under which their sentence can be reviewed. In fact, I'm not aware of any case in which this court has refused to hear a challenge under the 109E failing for an as-applied statutory challenge. As to the contention that it appears that the state makes that Mr. Brochet, by virtue of not being behind bars, has somehow been paroled from his sentence, quite the opposite. He will, for the remainder of his life, absent a decision of this court or a change in the legislation, be required to register as a sex offender and be subject to possible supervision by the Office of Parole Administration.
Isn't supervision the nature of parole?
This court has found that if I could just have a moment to answer, Your Honor. This court has found that in the case of the lifetime community supervision, because there are additional affirmative restraints imposed upon the defendant, that it's a form of punishment. And so I would assert it's a lifetime punishment on the defendant.
Assuming I sign on to that, the question still remains, what kind of punishment is it? And isn't it a form of parole?
It's a form of parole in terms of he's not being held behind bars, but it's still a mandatory lifetime punishment that's imposed without any consideration of his culpability.
Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the arguments for today. The parties are excused, and we are adjourned.